It is a great pleasure to welcome back to the roundtable the director and CEO of the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, our dear friend Lori Norton Moffitt. Hello, how are you?
I'm wonderful and so happy to be here with you, Joe.
It's wonderful to have you here. It's wonderful to have you be a part of this discussion. A bit bittersweet because the reason I so wanted to talk to you was because of the announcement of your retirement. After four decades, you have decided that maybe now is the time next year to say, okay, I've had enough fun.
Time to invite in a new leader, right?
What goes into a decision like that?
Oh, there were many factors, Joe. I think the most important one at the moment was the really wonderful alignment of many aspects of the museum. Our board and leadership team, we've been building back a bit since the pandemic, building our staff team and bringing our financial strength to the fore. We've just completed a full campus master plan process that was very exciting to work on, and that is in place. And as you say, four decades leading the museum and a decade before that of working within the museum as curator and on our research project. So much has been accomplished that I feel I can lead, and I think it's a wonderful moment for bringing a new leader and fresh generations and ideas to the fore to lead the museum forward.
You have one of the greatest origin stories that I can imagine, where you are in college and you're a part-time summer docent at the museum, and then you rise to the ranks of being the director. What do you remember of that first summer and how the museum struck you and what you learned?
That summer, I worked 2 days a week at the museum. I had a full-time summer job running a marina and really was working 7 days a week, and was an art history student at Connecticut College. I had finished my junior year at Williams College, and I was particularly struck by a couple of things. One was the extraordinary beauty and quality of Norman Rockwell's art and paintings and subject matter, and the tremendous appreciation that the visitors to the then 7-year-old museum enjoyed. And this was juxtaposed with my art history training that did not teach Norman Rockwell, did not include him in the pantheon of American artists, and in particular, I think, sidelined him as an illustrator. And this contrast was startling to me because he was beloved by the public, by decades and generations of viewers, and the quality of his art was just superb. So this was galvanizing to me, particularly after I finished college and had the opportunity to continue to work at the museum in ways that maybe we'll talk about.
Absolutely. Well, I do want to talk about that sidelining. But before we do, how was the museum, you say, 7 years in is when you arrived, but how was it ultimately set up in the sense of with the Rockwell family and what the mission of that museum was going to be versus any other, say, Norman Rockwell Museum?
The origin story of the Norman Rockwell Museum is also very interesting because it began as a community endeavor to save an old house. And those who have visited what was known as the Old Corner House on Main Street of Stockbridge know that it's a beautiful federal period building. We deployed 6 rooms in the house as gallery space, and the collection came to the museum as a result of Norman and Molly Rockwell being two of the citizens that banded together to save this building from demolition. It was the 1960s, a lot of urban renewal, and the idea that this beautiful home on Main Street would be turned down was anathema to a number of leaders in the community. Norman Rockwell's artwork had rarely been seen in person. I think there had been one traveling national exhibition that the Brooklyn Museum organized. And when people saw the artwork, they just started flocking to this little building, this house. And the museum built a wing on to house the visitor reception area and store, but it wasn't enough. That building was filled, every room, with 25 people, all moving in unison like musical chairs when the gallery tours finished in one gallery and visitors could move on to the next. So those of us who worked there then as guides or in the store, a great deal of our work was telling the stories about Norman Rockwell and the stories around his paintings and the history, but also hospitality, people management, moving people around the building, keeping them happy. They were waiting in long lines outside. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't long before the board realized they had a de facto Norman Rockwell Museum on their hands, even though they'd began as a community effort and formed the small Stockbridge Historical Society at the time. And very soon, the board realized they needed to start to either find a way to expand on that property, which wasn't realistic. There was no space, and or be in the business of creating a new home for the museum. And at that same time, just before Norman Rockwell's passing, he set up an art trust and he placed his original art in this trust and put it in the care and stewardship of the Old Corner House, which became known and incorporated as the Norman Rockwell Museum. And to that, he added his studio and his archives. And at that point in 1975, 3 years before he died in 1978, the board realized there was going to need to be a new home, a new building to accommodate having become the central repository of Norman Rockwell's art and life.
It's amazing because many of us still think of it as the new building, but it's been around for how long?
32 years now. We moved into the new site in 1993, and it was around 1980 that the board began the search for a site and the design work, the campaign, and all the heavy lifting that goes into creating a new museum building.
And it becomes the perfect site because not only does it house the archive that you had been left, but it also allows you to present the studio. It allows you to see the landscape. It allows you to be in Stockbridge where so much of Norman Rockwell's work was created.
There were some very interesting personal ties that Norman Rockwell had to that site. He was friends with the owner, Josephine Musgrave. She was a sculptor, and the two of them had participated in an art class with Peggy Best in the years immediately after Norman Rockwell's wife, Mary, had passed away. And we were able to relocate his studio, which was moved to the beautiful grounds, to site it over the Housatonic River in the way that it had overlooked the river in its original location in town behind his house. And he also used to ride his bike through the property, and he had a whole bike route that went through Stockbridge. And so we felt there were some nice ties and also the opportunity to save a beautiful 40-acre site and the historic home and history of that region, which goes right back to the original Stockbridge Mohican inhabitants.
It's one of my favorite things to see when the bike is on display.
We have three of his bikes, in fact, which is so much fun to have a few of his personal items that were part of his life outside of his painting world.
Lori Norton Moffat is our guest and talking about her 4 decades at the Norman Rockwell Museum and her decision to retire. Has it completely sunk in that you're kind of, okay, we're handing this over?
It's a long off-ramp to give the board time to find my successor. So it's, you know, my foot fully to the pedal to do all the work that we have planned ahead. But the glimmers of, oh, that's going to change, or this, you know, project won't be one that I will be working on going forward, I think, you know, are glimmers that this is a decision. The timing feels just right. I'm very centered and at peace with the decision, but it is a huge life change.
So you were named director in 1986. You're in your 20s. And then as you say, it's the 90s, the new museum opens, and is just the talk of the town. Everybody is talking about this amazing museum. But then, going back to what we were talking about before, that sidelining of Norman Rockwell as just an illustrator and nostalgia as opposed to real, quote-unquote, real art. And you then become a real activist and advocate on behalf of that art and artwork. Did you know what you were up against when you started that process?
I think I did understand at some level the resistance that there was to looking at Norman Rockwell as an important American art figure. I understood that from my college years and art history training. What was so powerful was seeing the extraordinary reaction of our visitors when they saw the paintings, both at the Old Corner House and in our new home where we are now. What was clear to me was that when people saw the original art, they actually had a transformation. And it had been very difficult for anyone to see the original Rockwell paintings. They had experienced them in print on the magazine covers or inside images. And it's a very different experience looking at the original art. And also, the times were beginning to shift. And the era where Rockwell was actively working and hugely successful as an artist was a time when the fine art world was focused on abstraction, on American expressionism, on sort of devolution of form and subject. Narrative painting and realism was not at the forefront, photorealism maybe being the exception. And you had other artists like Andy Warhol, who began his career as a commercial illustrator and then married that idea of commerce into the art that he was making. But illustration as a profession goes back centuries, not only in the United States, but in Europe. And so there are many, many illustrators who are extraordinarily influential in how they reflect what's going on in society. They create imagery that influences what people are thinking and how they're experiencing art. So I long had the belief that Rockwell was important and also that this field of illustration was important to be understood as one aspect of American art.
And part of that is because even in your early days, you see how people were relating to the art, which you still see today. I mean, I was there recently, and you see that every moment when people see a Rockwell for the first. I just had someone tell me the other day, like, I couldn't believe how big they are, you know, of just that reaction that comes that is, it's really deep and meaningful.
It is. There really is nothing quite like seeing an original Norman Rockwell painting, maybe a bit the way someone feels when they look at a Sargent painting in real life. The verisimilitude, the life-size figures, the beautiful clothing, the details in the subjects. And of course, Rockwell was painting a slice of everyday life, not high society life, but the artwork is magnificent. And I think that was one of the first decisions we made, was it was going to be important to share that art. Even when the board was building the museum, we recognized the responsibility that we had. We were stewards of a national treasure. And that while many people would flock to Stockbridge, and we've welcomed millions of visitors to both our current home and our previous home, much of the country will never have that privilege or opportunity. So the decision to share this collection with other museums and begin to travel and allow people to see the art, as well as allow the world of art criticism to the opportunity to see the original art, began that transformation of people appreciating Rockwell for the extraordinary artist that he is.
Sort of a chicken and egg question, but I assume that as it comes to the backyards of people, that, I mean, one of the things you saw were record crowds coming out to see the art, and then also this deep appreciation.
Yes, there really was a groundswell. And I have to credit one of my art colleagues, Ned Rifkin, at the High Museum of Art, who invited and approached us to help organize this first major traveling exhibition back
in Atlanta.
In the late 90s. And we worked with the High Museum of Art in Atlanta. And he was surprised at the challenge it took to place that exhibition in the nation's major art museums. There was still curatorial resistance. But there were numerous colleagues, including the Guggenheim in New York City, and our wonderful colleague Tom Krenz, who hailed from Williams College and the Berkshires, who were very excited to present Rockwell's art in their community. And that exhibition, I think, became the turning point where the world of art criticism and the professional art world began to see Rockwell in a different light. That show was scheduled to be exhibited at the Guggenheim in the fall of 2001. And that's, of course, the year that 9/11 happened. And all airlines shut down. The city of New York and the nation and the world were grieving. The Guggenheim could not access an international show that they were trying to bring in. And they asked us if we could offer the art sooner, get the art there in September, not in November when it was originally scheduled to start. So the exhibition was on view in Stockbridge, but we really wanted to help New York, our neighbors, the world in that moment, and we did arrange for the exhibition to arrive earlier. That art became a balm to the visitors who came to see it. And I think there was such a cataclysmic shift in the world at that moment that what had been viewed for many decades as more maybe Pollyannish or the art not taken so seriously suddenly became understood for the four freedoms that it represented and his work for civil rights and work that also was uplifting, and that this was a moment where people needed to be uplifted and find some hope and optimism at a time that felt so utterly despairing. And this brought out a very different critical response to Rockwell's work than we had seen in earlier times.
Lori Norton Moffat is director and CEO of the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and our guest on the roundtable this morning. Do you feel, as you were doing this work of increasing the stature, and ultimately to the point now where a Rockwell on the auction block brings some of the highest prices that we've ever seen in art. So congratulations. Did you always feel that that would have been or was the wish of Norman Rockwell himself?
I've been very careful throughout my career to try not to speak for Norman Rockwell or place myself in his head. But what I do observe about that is I think for someone who was as big-hearted as he was, who was as popular and successful as he was as an illustrator and beloved by the people, and who really, I'd say, prided himself, loved the field of illustration, that it had to have been hurtful to not have the professional stature in the fine art world. And while he would always laugh about that, and for him, his next best painting would be his next one, and he received just bags full of fan mail. We have all this fan mail in the mm-hmm. archive. I hope he would be pleased that the work is seen now in a way that mirrors how the public always viewed his work.
And then you take it one step further, and several steps further, because not only do you exhibit Norman Rockwell's work, but you exhibit other artists. And right there in the galleries, right next to Norman Rockwell, are these amazing exhibitions that you've put on over the years, everything from Mad Magazine to Andy Warhol, you mentioned the New Yorker magazine, Roschast, and dot, 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 dot. That is incredible, too, in the Jeremy Pinckney. I mean, the fact that illustration then also is being put just side by side with Norman Rockwell.
That grew out of a conversation with our board of trustees, and of course you know my dear colleague Stephanie Plunkett very well, who's been our chief curator and really an expert in the art of illustration. And our board lifted this conversation up very early on. We decided when we first opened the museum, we had to focus our resources and could only collect Rockwell for a time, but we would begin to exhibit the work of other illustrators, because the thinking and understanding is Rockwell did not arise in a vacuum. He had admired the illustrators who preceded him, Howard Pyle, N.C. Wyeth, J.C. Leyendecker, many more. And that fertile ground of the publishing world and really a demand for visual communication was the era in which he grew up and what he aspired to want to do. And then he went on to influence so many illustrators who followed him. And so the thinking was that his work would be better understood and more enduring if it was surrounded by and the centerpiece of this larger field of American illustration art. We had been exhibiting illustrators' works for a good decade. And so in 2010, we made the decision to actually broaden our mission, almost two decades, I guess, of illustration exhibitions, and begin collecting illustration and modify the mission to move toward being a museum or center for American illustration art.
Which is very exciting, because then that becomes almost the centerpiece of that movement, doesn't it?
And it's exciting because we are able to work with contemporary artists. And I think that keeps a museum vibrant and alive and connected to the pulse of what's going on in the world. And you named many of the illustrators we've exhibited and more. And these are the artists who look around at what is happening in the world. They find ways to communicate those issues through their art, through cartooning, and they're messengers. They reflect the culture. They reflect how people and society is viewing the world, but they also shape it, because you think of a powerful image like Norman Rockwell's Problem We All Live With, and we know from the letters he received that he actually changed people's minds about civil rights, about desegregation, about the wrongs of racism. And so this is very powerful art, and it's thrilling for us to be able to work with the best practitioners of the times, as well as the historical perspectives we present.
So as we wrap up our time together, the museum is undergoing a search. So the board will search for your successor. And you, as you said, as you indicated, are working on a lot of the projects and getting them either completed or on their way. And then what?
I'm greatly looking forward to time for reflection. Yeah. I'd like to reflect on this wonderful opportunity I've had to work with an extraordinary, not only team of people, a board and staff, but people all over this world who have appreciated the work of the museum. I'm interested in having some time for being, not only doing, mm-hmm. and be able to, you know, think about what this work has meant. I have some wonderful family opportunities with a new granddaughter whose life I would like to be a part of.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I continue some of my volunteer work. I'll continue my work with the American Alliance of Museums on the Accreditation Commission, which will keep me closely involved with the museum world. So I'll be working through that after I'm no longer at the museum.
And whether you like it or not, you're one of the foremost experts of Norman Rockwell. So
that will probably not change.
I assume you will be called on that to help out in many different ways.
It would be my pleasure to support my successor and continue to support our team and our board and ensure our wonderful museum thrives.
I look forward to having you back on July 8th and talking with your colleagues in the arts at the Colonial Theater. And I can't thank you enough for coming in today. It means so much to me that the museum has always meant so much to me, and your personal friendship. And as long as I've been here, 30-plus years you have been there, and you have been nothing but a friend and a wonderful, wonderful colleague and a great cheerleader. And I just thank you so much for the beautiful work you've done.
Well, I thank you, Joe, for your time and your interest and attention to the museum. And one other thing I'll look forward to doing is reading many of the wonderful books that you profile on the book show.
Oh, good.
I have
I'll send
a little
you a whole
more
stack.
Time, so send me the list.
Yes, excellent. Lori Norton Moffitt is director and CEO of the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and normanrockwell.org. You can find out more information. What a delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. Such
Be
a
well.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.